I'm Aaron Schachter, and you're listening to The World. Today marks 2 years since the collapse of Rana Plaza, a massive garment factory in Bangladesh. More than 1,100 people were killed and 2,000 injured. Many saw the event as clear evidence of an industry out of control. Western retailers squeezing suppliers for cheaper clothes, Bangladeshi suppliers cutting corners, corrupt politicians turning a blind eye, and workers paying the price. The industry has seen some changes in the 2 years since. The people who lived through the disaster, though, are still struggling to rebuild their lives. Bruce Wallace went to the industrial suburb on the outskirts of Dhaka, where the collapse happened, to talk to some of those survivors.
Rafiqul Islam climbs two flights of stairs, then goes out to a rooftop overlooking a wide field with mounds of rubble. We see piles of bricks and concrete slabs, faded pieces of red and blue fabric. Right below us, an old man is picking around in a hole. They found a skull there the other day, Islam says. We're looking at what's left of Rana Plaza. The eight-story factory complex once stood 50 yards away from us, just beyond the rubble field. 5,000 people worked in the complex, named for Sohel Rana, the owner. Managers sent workers home early on April 23, 2013, the day before the collapse, after workers spotted deep cracks in the walls. But Rana, a local member of Bangladesh's ruling political party, ignored warnings. With the help of factory managers, he forced workers inside on the morning of the 24th. Shortly after, the building lost electricity, a common occurrence on Dhaka's overstressed power grid. And generators improperly placed on the upper floors kicked in. Rafiqul Islam was next door in the office of the union that he heads. It was right before 9 a.m. We were just about to start the meeting when there was a sound like thunder, he tells me. We thought this building was collapsing, so we started to run. Then we realized the building next door had collapsed. Government investigators later concluded that vibrations from those generators were a factor in bringing down the precarious building. All eight floors pancaked in a heap. Islam ran to the site and spent the next days pulling people out. He tells me he still has trouble sleeping. He can still hear workers screaming, "Bachao, bachao, save us, save us." We walk down to the spot where Rana Plaza once stood. It's striking how small it actually is. You think about the death toll, 1,134 people, and expect something bigger. Aside from a cast concrete memorial to victims sandwiched behind a busy bus stop, this could easily be any other vacant lot in Dhaka's sprawling industrial suburbs. Someone shows us the gap in the fence, and we walk closer to the site. On weekends, neighborhood kids rummage for scrap metal. One is down in a hole working on a hunk of metal. It takes me a second to recognize the flattened frame of a car that would have been parked in Rana Plaza's basement. Clothing labels with familiar names like Joe Fresh and JCPenney are still everywhere. In the aftermath of the disaster, a few Western brands acknowledged that they sourced from factories in Rana Plaza. Others denied connections until media reports and international advocacy ratcheted up the shame. At the end of 2013, a handful of Western retailers, along with labor and industry groups and the Bangladesh government, launched a compensation fund for survivors and victims' families. It's called the Rana Plaza Arrangement. More retailers have paid into the fund since then, often after international pressure. The fund has promised close to $30 million in payments to survivors and relatives of the dead. 2 years on, it's raised more than two-thirds of that. Rafiqul Islam, who continues to work with a number of the survivors, says it will take more than money. There's been a lot of talk about compensation, but there hasn't been enough talk about rehabilitation of workers, he says. It doesn't matter how much money they give them. Sooner or later, the money will run out. More attention should have been paid to getting these workers back to work. For many of the 2,400 survivors, it's hard to go back to work because of the physical and mental trauma. Only a handful have returned to garment factories, though they're generally the best-paying option. 18-year-old Mahinur Akhtar tried to go back. She tells me that after spending 8 months recovering from injuries to her head and the loss of a toe, she got a job at another factory nearby. She'd only sewn two pieces when all the memories of Rana Plaza came back, she says. She passed out. Her manager pulled her aside, saw her injuries, and asked her if she'd been in the factory collapse. "We don't employ Rana Plaza people," she recalls him saying. They put her on a rickshaw and told her not to come back. She hasn't worked since. Other survivors told me similar stories. Rafiqul Islam hears them all the time. He says that management thinks they may be injured or traumatized and wouldn't be able to do the work. The international response did include some help for workers trying to recover from the physical and emotional trauma. But it's clear there's still a lot of need. Rosina Begum was working on the third floor of Rana Plaza. We sit in the cramped home she rents, her five-month-old daughter lying beside her, and husband and father looking on. She seems tired as she tells me what happened. She was trapped inside for 3 days. A collapsed beam had crushed her left arm and pinned her down. Rescuers couldn't get to her, so they slit her a hacksaw. Over several hours, working a bit and then passing out, she cut her own arm off above the elbow. Then the rescuers got her out. She pulls what's left of her arm out from under her purple salwar kameez to show me. Rosina and her family have been living on about $1,900 she's gotten so far from the compensation fund. It's an average income for Bangladesh, but much less than what she made when she was working. Her husband had to leave his job to take care of her and their baby. The couple has an older daughter, too, and say they're struggling to pay her school fees. They still live near Rana Plaza, but Rosina says she tries to avoid the site because she can still smell death. My interpreter asks, "You mean you imagine the smell?" "No, the smell is there," she insists. Rafiqul Islam said he'd like to see the site turned into a memorial for those who died, with a dormitory where survivors could live. Plans to sell the land and use the money for a victims fund are stalled. Sohel Rana is in prison, but he still owns the land. A woman approaches us as Islam and I walk around. Rubia Akhtar says her daughter died in the collapse. With the compensation money, she opened a shop next to the memorial statue. Her daughter's picture hangs at the back of the tin stall, among stacks of inexpensive necklaces and bracelets. Every day she comes here and thinks about her daughter, she says.
Do you think about moving? About getting away from here?
There's nowhere for me to go, she says. For The World, I'm Bruce Wallace, Dhaka, Bangladesh.